Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here, as always, with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Ross Ferguson.
We're back in the booth.
This is becoming... It feels more regular, even though it's really once a month.
It's still more regular. When we started, I think it was maybe every couple of months.
Yeah.
And now we're every month.
Yeah. But it feels somehow more frequent than that. Maybe it's just because we see each other all the time.
Possibly.
That could be what it is.
I also just live here, study here, work here, on the podcast here, yeah. Do all my meetings here. Please, someone help me be released from this canvas.
Well, there's something unique about you today.
Oh, yes.
Someone else made comment on, yeah. And I noticed it.
Yeah.
Do you often wear shorts?
On the way to recording this morning, on the way to recording this morning, someone looked me up and down and went, have you forgotten you've got a job? we don't wear shorts at work. So we're kind of business casual at the most casual. I would personally wear shorts every day of the year.
Okay.
So like my preference is to wear shorts. But because of work, I don't tend to wear them. So any opportunity I can wear them outside of work, I will.
I don't know that I've ever seen you in shorts. Surely you've worn them on a Sunday night or something before.
Yeah. I don't wear shorts to church.
Okay.
So yeah. Basically see each other on this campus and at church. So
The shorts and church thing, that kind of goes back to the dress code question we had not so long ago.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not even wearing a shirt, but I just want to be clear. I'm wearing a shirt. I'm not wearing
You just walked in bumming around.
With a pair of shorts on, that's it.
Catching a suntan.
I mean, my preference genuinely is I would be flip-flop shorts and a t-shirt. That would be my choice.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So. But I dress up for...
I'm trying to make a connection between that and where you're from. Is that a common attire where you're from?
It is not a common attire
from where I'm from.
My viewpoint when I grew up was, if it's not raining, I'm wearing shorts. and that's because it's quite a rare occasion. Now, see, the thing is, here, you can put a pair of shorts in the morning and actually know it's going to be sunny all day.
Mm-hmm.
And in Scotland, you put a pair of shorts in the morning, you should probably put some jeans in a bag just in case.
Right.
That's my preference. So I find it weird when people are like, you're wearing shorts. Yeah. As soon as I get home, I'm wearing shorts. It's just that I have to be a little bit smarter for work. Yeah.
You could get those pants that have like the zip, where you zip
absolutely
off the bottoms
not.
Of them.
I have not got to the point of being semi-granddad.
Yeah. No. Yeah, you just unzip it and it takes the bottoms. I don't know what you do, though. You roll them up and put them in your pockets, I guess. I don't know.
And just to be clear,
for our
UK listeners, he is not meaning pants in the way that UK listeners would hear that.
Is pants underwear?
Yes.
So you've just
asked if I've got zipped up underwear. So just to be clear, I want to make sure all cultural issues are dealt with
so
here.
So trousers, is that what that means?
Trousers.
Okay,
Zipper trousers.
So got these zips around the knee, basically.
Yeah.
You could take them and make and turn them into short pants.
Yeah, right? I'm not.
Yeah. Seen any good movies lately? You were asking me last week or this week.
Yeah.
If I wanted to go see a movie, and I was already seeing one in the afternoon.
So. And I didn't actually go out because Miriam actually had a cancellation. So we ended up just staying at home.
Okay, gotcha.
I mean, we went to see a movie together. I don't know if you recall our experience.
We did?
Yeah.
What did we see?
Civil War.
Oh, that's right.
And we had an experience.
Yeah, it was an experience.
It was
kind of an unnerving experience.
Yeah.
I saw this week the new Apes movie, the new Planet of the Apes movie. Are you into those at all?
So I feel like I watched the first and second and then got a little bit bored.
When you say first and second, do you mean the 1960, 1970?
No.
Or you mean like the current
series, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
You missed the best one. If you stopped after the second war, if you still only see one.
Yeah.
War for the Planet of the Apes is great. It's an action movie essentially, and the characterization is really good.
Yeah.
This one was like, it was all right. All the Apes movies are like these little parables for things. Even if you go back to the 60s and 70s, they were trying to like make commentary on different things, and it's kind of weird, you know? Like even in the first one, it was almost like a parable about evolution or something, which is weird because Charlton Heston was in it.
Okay.
And then he was like, doing Bible movies and stuff, but in any event, this one I can't quite figure out. I think it's like an anti-technology thing, which is just so funny. These big multi-million dollar movies
making
that use CGI and everything, and they're making these I mean, I feel the same way about like Avatar.
Yeah.
I've never, like, I'm philosophically opposed to the Avatar movies. I've not seen a single one, but my understanding is...
There's only two, just so you're...
Okay, but they're making like 38 more, supposedly.
The first one was great. The second one was...
I don't believe it. But aren't they like sort of like Pocahontas sort of... like it's about native versus
it is like
colonization and technology.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the second one is more about war than it is about anything else.
So I love the idea of a movie that takes 7 years to make on a computer that's against technology. It's just, to me, it's amazing. So
yeah. Do you know what we did watch? Our kids. So we are trying to work through some kind of like older classics with our kids, the stuff that Miriam and I would have watched as a kid or we would have seen. So two movies we've watched with them. So number one, The Sound of Music, they had never seen.
Okay.
First 5 minutes, they're like, we don't want to watch this. And then they were, you know, they were really into it, really enjoyed it. So they really enjoyed that. And then we just watched Cool Runnings with the kids.
Oh, right. The Jamaican bobsled team. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And again, they watched the first 5 minutes. What is this? It's like, just
what
wait.
Has to happen in the first 5 minutes to get your kids interested? A song and dance number?
To be honest, it needs to not be made in the 80s or 90s. Oh, gotcha. So that's the issue. So next up is your recommendation that we're to watch with the kids. Little Giants.
Little Giants.
Little Giants. So part of the reason we're watching, like, sports movie. We also watched McFarland recently. Okay. I don't know if you've seen that with our girls. So it's based on...
it's a Christian movie, right?
No, it's not.
It looks like one.
Well, it may look like one. Based on a true story. Okay. Kevin Costner becomes a cross-country coach in the south of California, coaching Mexican immigrants who are field pickers to be one of the best cross-country teams in the area.
Okay.
And it's all about essentially... him wanting to get out of this town and get away from it and realizing actually if he invests in these young guys, he'll actually create community. And we're kind of watching these types of films with our kids because they've been watching like Disney animated films for a while. You know, they're kind of soon to be 10 and 12. And we're kind of graduating them up a little bit into PG movies with a kind of good story to them and maybe a little bit edgy. Cool Runnings is a little bit edgy. The coach cheats and, you know, like in history and all this sort of stuff. So just in the sense of for our kids to just start engaging with material that is older but safe.
Sure.
So,
So
there's a few movies. McFarlane, Sound of Music, Cool Runnings, and we're about to see Little Giants with the kids.
Yeah, Little Giants is great. And it's more comedic. It doesn't have the dramatic kind of... thing to you know.
Not a Christian movie then.
It's not a Christian. It's a Disney live action movie like from the 90s. What about Invincible? Have you seen that?
I've seen Invincible.
Yeah. I don't know if that's appropriate.
Language wise, maybe not appropriate for the kids.
I gotcha. It's a pretty good inspirational film. Yeah. Since we're dealing with movie criticism now, it's a good segue into our topic for the day, which is just dealing with criticism.
Yeah.
You've never been criticized, Ross, right? Like, this is not anything you've ever had to deal with.
I feel
with.
Like I'm well known for being a critic and being criticized. So,
like a lightning rod.
Oh,
it strikes you and it strikes out. Yeah. Is that what it is?
Sure. Let's phrase it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I thought generally, so we could talk about this in a few different ways. Hmm. You know, in pastoral ministry, you certainly.
Oh, yeah.
Deal with criticism quite a bit. I think probably even more than the average congregation member even understands.
Yeah.
You know, they, I think generally think that the pastor, like if you're sending a bit of criticism, you're thinking like, I'm the only person doing this. Yeah. And it's like, that's not true.
it definitely is not.
But I also just think we have a lot of listeners who aren't pastors.
Yeah.
So I don't want to just camp out on that, but we could just talk generally, like how biblically to deal with.
Yeah, I think just talk generally because I think as whether you're a pastor in ministry or whether you're just a Christian, you don't even serve in church in any form of way, dealing with criticism, ultimately, I think the answer is always going to be the same irrespective of your role and also irrespective to some extent of the type of criticism you're going to receive. I think generally how we do it. So I'm going to start with maybe just an overarching principle.
Okay.
And I think this overarching principle ultimately will feed into all of the specifics, which is just this, a soft heart with a thick skin.
Okay.
And I think that's the overarching principle that at some level, you're going to have to take feedback. That's the soft heart, and listen to it and hear it. And then on another level, you're going to have to be going, this is just simply criticism and I don't need to spend my life thinking it through.
Yeah.
And so I think the overarching principle is there is always learning opportunities and always thoughts that you can work through. And there's also always the protection and guarding of not being overly consumed by what is being said to you and about you. So I think that's the overarching principle, a soft heart with a thick skin.
It's an interesting and unique, I think, approach, because we live in a really, I want to say bifurcated, that may not be the exactly right world, in which it seems like we're swimming in a sea of criticism. And I just mean like culturally, not just Christians, but everybody. We live in a world of negative feedback constantly, especially like if you're online or what have you, but we're dealing with criticism all the time. At the same time, the common mantra on how to deal with it is don't listen to the haters, you know, just tune them out. They don't get rid of toxic people in your life, and anyone who says, you know, something contrary to your truth or your vision or your well-being, you know, whatever it is. So we're told in some ways that the way to deal with criticism is you never listen to it.
Yeah.
You tune it all out. They don't, they don't care about you. And the Christian's view is a little more nuanced than that, which is sometimes criticism is warranted.
Yeah.
And we don't really have, I guess, the mandate to tune everybody out. Yeah. I suppose we can talk about boundaries in some ways for someone who has a critical spirit or something like that. But yeah, you and I don't have the option as believers in Christ. If another believer especially comes to us and says, I've got a bone to pick with you to say, you know what? I don't listen to the haters.
It'd be surprising though to know how many pastors actually do that.
Yeah, they've got
this kind of ego that says, I mean, I think it comes down to some essential questions you've got to start asking yourself. So you've been criticized about something. It doesn't really matter what it is per se at this stage, but you do have to ask some questions. And one of the first questions I ask is, does this come from somebody I know and I trust? I think if you are getting random people giving random criticism, you treat that differently to the person that you know and trust.
Yeah.
So there's certain people in my life I know who, you know, came to me and said, hey, I saw you doing this. I think you got to cut that out, or I don't think that's great behavior. If that's someone I know and trust, I'm going to really like open my ears. I'm really thinking, wow, I'm surprised they've said that to me. If it's somebody I completely don't know and they're just doing that, I'm going to take that with a little pinch of salt. I'm probably going to share it with my wife, or I'm going to just kind of mull over it a little bit, and I'm going to decide whether that's something that kind of criticism is something I need to actually hear and actually need to think through. So I think that's the first question you got to ask, is where's this criticism coming from?
Yeah. Considering the source, if it's somebody, let me back up, because I'm going to talk about dealing with criticism. Let's talk about history. Like, what's your history with criticism? Because I think I've gone through waves of how I deal with it. And a lot of it, so in the beginning, I would say my impulse, when I say in the beginning, I just mean like as a young adult, and probably for a fair amount of like my 20s and maybe even into my 30s, I was instantly defensive against criticism. I would listen to it and I would always have like the defense lawyer would pop up and I would say, well, you're wrong, and let me give you the point by point refutation and et cetera, et cetera. But I think that in itself was also a reaction to sort of my childhood and growing up and always feeling a sense of criticism. Even if someone wasn't actively criticizing me, I just always, you can call it low self-esteem. You can call it insecurity. I was an erratic kid. I just had, you know, a lot of timidity and a lot of insecurity about things, and always felt like I was only as good as my failures, that is my failures that define me. So I kind of had this reflexive kind of, I think, wound about it. And so I wouldn't say I argued back a lot when I was a kid, but then when I got into young adulthood, I think my reflexive sort of like, I can't take one more, you know, criticism, because I didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to deal with the insecurity in me. I didn't really have a good foundation, you know, as a believer, but I didn't really have a sense of the imputation of Christ's righteousness or anything like that. And so I think it just as a lot of young men are, they just tend to be somewhat either rebellious or just erratic in their thinking or impulsive maybe, and also still insecure. And
yeah.
So I went into kind of a very defensive phase.
And would that be with like every criticism you got?
Just about. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I can't cordon off anything where I think that wouldn't happen. I think even like well-meaning, even someone who loved me, I wasn't able to kind of put that into a category of like, okay, this is someone who is trying to sharpen me or they're not trying to hurt me.
Yeah.
I just would instantly, and sometimes probably, honestly, you know, not trying to psychoanalyze myself, a lot of times maybe because I knew it was true.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but what I would do to justify my defensiveness is to say like, I can't take one more, you know, bit of criticism. Like, won't someone encourage me? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a good process for considering and for listening and for wanting to see that others meant me well. And it wasn't until probably, you know, mid-30s, late 30s maybe that I actually, sad to say, began to settle down a little bit and consider the heart behind the criticism and do as you said, like, is this someone who just has a pattern of like, you know, beating me up, or is this someone who loves me and I know that they care for me?
Yeah. I mean, like I think both of us have probably had church history times where we're thinking there is a member that's always going to critique me. Doesn't matter what I do.
Yeah.
And in some senses, as you get older and more mature, you're able to spot that and go, that is a critical spirit. We're going to have to deal with that, but I don't need to take that as personally. For me, I guess I had a different issue, I guess, growing up. So listeners will know that my father passed away when I was 13. And I think at that moment, I always say that I had to become a man in that moment. So my older brother was struggling, my mother was struggling, and I had to be the mature person. My brother went off to college and then I had to be the mature person to look after my mother. And it's not that she was decrepit or anything. It was just like, you have to be that when you lose the dad and the husband in the household. And I would say that for me, I was very driven because of that. Like I had to grow up very fast. And because I was driven, and I would argue I still am driven, at that time, I was very successful in almost anything I touched. So I was straight A's at school. I was working multiple jobs from the age of 16. I strangely was earning more money at 16 than I'm earning now in my mid-30s.
Okay, all right.
Like I was successful. I was successful at sport, academics. I was getting placed at universities. I met my wife, Miriam, at 17. We were married at 18. Like there was just that sense of, if you looked at my life, everything I touched was going well. And I would argue it's because I was just driven. I just threw a ton of energy into it. The problem was I was ignoring every failure on the way through. And there was one of those elements in life where I painted a good picture of success, but behind the scenes, I was just crumbling and I was not able to cope with everything. And so whether that was obvious sins in my life or hidden sins in my life or just like an air of superiority, nothing could touch me. And so for me, criticism was almost that, you don't know what you're talking about. Like, can you not see all of my successes? And I would say that carried really into my mid-20s, you know, and I would say where it came to a head was just after my twins were born. And just that complete feeling of inadequacy kind of caught up with me. And suddenly I wasn't successful at everything. Ministry wasn't going as well. Being a parent to three kids under the age of two was just a bit of a nightmare. You know, I didn't have all the money, didn't have the best grades, was struggling to do study online, you know, all these sorts of things. And it was kind of dawning on me that I had been riding on my own coattails, like off success. And the criticisms just mounted to a level of, actually, they're all talking truth to me. And it was that sudden realization of years of criticism that I had ignored. So then came a new season for me, which was that I almost was crushed by every criticism from then on in, because there was like this realization of, yes, I am a failure. That 10 years of success didn't come to anything. And I would say it's taken me into my 30s to figure out that I can divide up that criticism and figure out what's good for me, what is not, what comes from people that I actually ultimately should ignore, and what comes from people that I should really pay attention to. And I would say I'm still driven. I'm still somebody that I would say I'm relatively successful in the sense of, you know, I study hard, I work hard, and I kind of reap the rewards of doing that. But now I am less, I sit less on my success, and I would sit more in that any day a criticism could come and I have to be able to know how to handle that and delve into that. So I would say it wasn't a confidence issue for me. I wasn't crushed by criticism per se. I was actually being crushed by the success that I had mounted myself onto and actually needed to learn. I needed to be brought down a notch or two. It was just a shame that I was kind of angry at all the people that were trying to do that. So
yeah, there's a couple of things, couple of wonderful things that happen as you get older, right? One is just the work of progressive sanctification, mm-hmm. becoming more settled in who you are in Christ, and being okay if somebody dares to question something or to criticize you, and you know what to do with that. Mm-hmm. We can talk about that in just a moment. But the other thing is, as you get older, you just care less what people think.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really is a miracle thing that's happened. I can't believe that it has happened in my life, because for so long I just had this approval wound and had this, you know, unstable sense of security and identity. And the fact that now, you know, I would have thought I'd have to be like elderly and senile to get to the point of not caring, to be nearing 50 and as you said, when it's somebody that I don't know, someone who doesn't know me, if they're just like throwing junk around.
Yep.
But I would say even in the church context or other things, when stuff is said that is critical and inappropriately critical or divisive or whatever, I'm less prone to like be impulsive or reactive about it. When I was younger, I tend to, you know, I would say like, oh, we got to do something about this. And now it's like, okay, let's think about this. Let's handle this. If we need to, let's address this. But we don't need to freak out about it. I'm not going to lose sleep about this. And it's astounding to me. It would have surprised me if I could go back like 15 years and go, you know what, this kind of thing, you're not going to lose sleep about it in the future. I'd be like, are you crazy? This is the biggest thing in the world right now.
And part of it is self-control, of controlling how you respond mentally. Because a lot of criticism that you get, we all know that we can control our stance. We can stand in a way, you know, when you uncross your arms and you're trying to look relaxed as they, you know, they fire bombs at you type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So we all know how to physically look like we're open and we're caring. But mentally, it's like ravaging our brain in terms of that criticism. And just as an example, I've done three preaching classes now on campus, two of which you preach multiple sermons and the professor and your fellow students critique your sermon. And it's like they give you like 30 seconds of positive and then go, okay, now here's how you can improve. 45 minutes later, they're still going. I've done two preaching labs for the PTC for you. And it is one of those things of you've got to be able to know, I actually am not worried about how you perceive me as a person, because ultimately I'm in hands of God and there's nothing you can do to take away my reward in Christ. Now I need to know how to handle what you're about to say. And I mean, even the PTC is an example. You preach your 30-minute sermon. There is a weird sense of pressure. It's before, you know, 18 months you've been in a residency. It's before the fellow brothers that you love and care for, that they love and care for you. You preach your 30 minutes. You've done the best you can. And then here comes the feedback. And to be fair, it's done in a positive way, but there's still this element that goes, but you're about to give me the negative. And what's the negative that's coming? And I think I would agree over the years, the self-control to be able to say, whatever you say, I can take as constructive. I can take as, I'll try that. I'm maybe not sure if I agree with you, but let's see if that works. Rather than, I feel like in my younger days, it was very much a, how dare you? How dare you challenge me? You don't know my life. You don't know what I've gone through. You don't know all my successes. You don't know all the pain I carry. I'm just going to toss that to the side. And I think you just kind of mature through the years of kind of going, okay, you think differently. You heard something differently.
Yeah.
And I've just learned over the years, some of those moments, you just have to kind of step down and go, yeah, I think they're wrong. And that's okay. Every piece of criticism doesn't have to be right and doesn't have to be treated as right. But I've found more often than not, there's some truth in it. There's something there.
Yeah. So let's talk about sort of the process of dealing with the criticism. You mentioned earlier sort of considering the source. Is this somebody that I know? Is this someone who has a heart for me? Yeah. And even if you don't know if they have a heart for you or not, if it's a fellow church member, if it's a member of your flock, if you're a pastor, if it's a family member or a friend, I weigh that more heavily than I would some rando on the internet, right, who just says something. And even like randos on the internet, I tend to separate them between someone who signs their name on something and someone who doesn't. Yes. Like if it's an anonymous person, I'm like, you know, you're, for all I know, you're a little kid in somebody's basement, you know. But in real life, I'm thinking, okay, I don't have the option to just
ignore this.
Ignore you, you know. I'm going to listen to you. But then beyond that, you know, I'm thinking like 1 Thessalonians 5:21, test all things, cling to what is good.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a kernel of truth in that criticism that you actually need to hear. Yeah. And you know, maybe it's something I haven't considered in this person actually. Even if they're coming at me in an ungentle way, even if they're not being very loving in their criticism, maybe there's something true in here that I can look for. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, a particular lady in my church years ago who began, my relationship with her began as sensing she was a critic because she was always pointing out things I needed to do better.
Yeah.
And it really bothered me and it really irritated me. But the more I got to know her, you know, first of all, we became good friends and she didn't always criticize me, but I began to see like, oh, she actually wants me to be a better pastor.
Yeah.
And she's saying these things. It's like she's, you know, she's rough around the edges. Mm-hmm. She could probably, you know, learn how to communicate a little more gently.
Yeah. Yeah.
But her heart is for me.
Yeah.
It's not against me.
Yeah.
And there's others that over time you get to see like, oh, they're against me. That's what this criticism is about. And you can figure that out if you actually listen well. And sometimes people, they just don't package it well, you know?
I was about to say, that's one of the questions I would ask is how is this person presenting the critique?
Yeah.
And you can usually tell the motive. So, you know, I've had emails where it's just been like, hey, you've done this wrong. And then I've had emails that have gone, you know, I've been really thinking through whether I want to share this with you. I decided I have. Here's the situation. I really hope that you would hear this. You know, it's being packaged in a way that is gently kind of trying to guide you. I mean, not so long ago, I remember a conversation we had, and I'm known for looking at the negative first rather than looking at the positive first.
Okay.
I feel like, I don't know, this might be just a Scottish thing that you just kind of go like, right, that's wrong. And that's just the thing kind of culturally we do. But also for me, I look at the negatives because I go, that's where we can improve. That's where we can get better. And when I look at the things that are good, I go like, right, they're sorted. They're good. Right. Let's get back to what we can improve on. And it's just kind of a personality trait. I have no excuses. It's just kind of what I'm like. And I remember even a conversation like you were saying, you do know that some people just kind of hear you always saying the things you don't like. And it was just that packaged off. You weren't saying, you're such a miserable guy, no one wants to be around you. You're kind of saying, hey, you know how you're coming across. And then there's just a way of packaging that that makes it palatable. And I think criticism, if you're going to give criticism, you need to be thinking about how you're going to do that, how you're packaging it, how you're presenting it. More often than not, it should be done in person rather than email, phone, or text. And again, even just hearing that tone of, you know, hey, brother, sister, like, I'm really struggling to say this to you, but I feel like I kind of have to. That is much better than an email that says, hey, listen up, this is an important email. So I think look how they package it. If it's somebody that's just kind of angry, and we see this on Twitter all the time. If someone's just angry and railing, you kind of know, okay, they're just angry.
Yeah, this says more about them than it does me, really.
Exactly. Yeah. I was actually just counseling someone last night off, give a bit of grace if somebody's packaged it really badly to you. And just think, is their motives right or wrong? Because if it's packaged badly, it might just be that they're nervous, that they don't have a clue how to say this to you.
Yeah.
But again, you can generally tell those that are critical in spirit, and no matter what you do or say, they're just going to hammer you. And those that are going, hey, let's have a chat about this.
Yeah.
The verse that really comes to mind on this is James 1:19. Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. And I think those three things is quick to hear. So you want to hear the criticism. Okay, what are you saying? What is at the you know, kind of the core of this? Slow to speak. You know, I'm not going to jump in and defend myself like you were saying earlier. I'm not going to try and explain my behavior. Slow to anger. Why does it go from quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger? Because actually when somebody's sharing something with you, boy, it can really rattle you and the hackles go up and the blood starts boiling. actually, if we can hear, not speak, and be more chilled out, more kind of slow to responding in a harsh way, we might hear some good. We might actually be able to handle it. It's also an ability to then go, yep, I think that's nonsense. I'm just going to walk away. Because yeah. You're not angry. You're not frustrated. You're not being defending yourself. You can just weigh up in that moment. And I've had criticisms where you just think, I have no idea where you're coming from. and you just move on.
Yeah.
Where if you are quick to anger, man, you get invested in that criticism and how dare they and do they know this? And, you know, it's
even
just
as you're rejecting it, it's in some way ruling your life and heart.
Yeah, it's actually a correct criticism as in how you respond.
Yeah. I had a friend who once upon a time basically called me in a gentle way on my defensiveness. And this is one of those things, like in the moment, first of all, and I still think this is true, but in the moment, my first thought was, there's no way to respond to this.
Yeah.
You say, you're too defensive.
And you can't defend.
I can't go, no, I'm not. You have to accept the criticism or what? I don't know. And so I was really angry about that. I was like, this is like, you know, one of those catch 22 type things. Yeah. And so like, there's no way for me to even respond to this. Yeah. But he was right. And part of how I knew he was right was, first of all, primarily, I knew it in my heart. Like, I knew it was. But it wasn't the first time I'd heard it. And I think that's another thing to ask is when criticism comes in, ask yourself, have I heard this before?
Yeah.
Is there a pattern or is this a recurring thing? Now, in the church world, it could be because someone has marshaled support and they've all decided that this is the thing that they're going to get you on. Let's not.
That's happened a few times.
That has happened. But sometimes it's, okay, if it's coming from multiple, you know, places and it's a similar sounding refrain, it could be that there's truth to this thing that you really ought to consider.
And
if it's just a one-off, it doesn't mean that it's wrong, but it, but at least you can put that in some context to go, okay, this is one person.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, they just don't like the cut of my jib. Maybe I've struck them wrong. You still need to consider it.
Yeah.
But I think if you've got multiple people saying the same thing, it is to give some pause and to kind of think about it more thoroughly. It doesn't mean that they're all right,
no,
but it does mean you should weigh it more heavily.
Yeah. So one of the criticisms I had in my last church was that I run 125 miles an hour and no one can keep up. And I was hearing it more and more, like multiple members were telling me this. And it dawned on me, it took me a while to figure out what the real criticism was. It wasn't that I was super driven and running, you know, 125 miles an hour. Is that I was expecting everybody else to run at the same pace.
Wow.
And they were basically criticizing it because they were saying, we can't keep up. You're asking too much of us. And I think sometimes criticism can be like a, you're the issue, but actually what they're saying is we are struggling. So it's not necessarily we want the better for you, it's we want the better for us. Not in a selfish way. They're just kind of saying, this is too much.
Yeah.
And what I learned in that season was, just because I run 125 miles an hour doesn't mean everybody else has to. And one of the counsels kind of my wife gave me is, why don't you just pick one thing for everyone else to be involved? And then behind the scenes, you can do 101 things if you want to, but just stop expecting everybody else to be part of that. And so I think when you're getting multiple people saying things to you, it's not just, hey, maybe I'm doing something, maybe I do need to consider it. Is also going, okay, why are different people from different backgrounds, different walks of life saying the same thing? What are they all experiencing?
Yeah.
And it might just be like, you know, as a family, you might have kids in church and your kids are really struggling in church and make a lot of noise, make a lot of mess, and you've had multiple people come to you about it. You know, maybe be thinking, is it a challenge on our parenting or is it something they're all experiencing? Could it be something that they're all struggling with that I can help them with? Do you know, it's not just always about what do I need to change for my sake? It's also what I need to change potentially for their sake to help them out. And again, hearing it from multiple people helps. The only one caveat I say to that though is if you're married, if your spouse says it, you don't need 101 other people to say it. Like your spouse knows you the best.
You know what? Sorry, dear. I'm going to have to get a second opinion. You need some confirmation.
I need four people to tell me that I'm wrong on this. You know, if Miriam says there's an area in my life that I need to work on, I almost take that as just straight truth. Mm. Like, because she knows me the best. She knows my motives. She knows what's going on. Here's one of the things I think is when you're dealing with criticism, the words you use in response are really important. So I was thinking of Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Sometimes somebody comes to you with a criticism and they're riled up actually, mm-hmm. you've done nothing wrong, but they've kind of riled themselves up.
Yeah.
Rather than defending yourself or pointing the finger at someone else and just having a soft answer can often just dispel that whole issue straight away.
Yeah.
I remember in one situation in church life, I was cleaning the sanctuary. We had had an event. Somebody came in and angrily stated, you know, the cleaner needs to do this. She needs to be in here and getting done, and basically being critical about somebody else. And I could have went, yeah, you're absolutely right. But actually, I just said to them quietly, like, it takes me 10 minutes and helps me wind down a little bit. So I'm just going to get on and do it. And after 10 minutes, I'll be good. And just that soft answer, they kind of went, oh. And you could tell they were going, I was hoping you would fight me on this. You know? So I would just
or
say,
agree with me in my
or
anger.
Agree, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I think sometimes when you're dealing with criticism, be thinking about how can I respond to this in such a way that this person feels heard, but I don't fan the flames of the issues they're raising, whether right or wrong issues. And that's especially important, I think, if you're serving in ministry.
Yeah.
Because if you have one members meeting where you go off on one in front of people, they're going to remember that and they're going to usually hold that against you. And I think it's one of the things of just learning to go, okay, I hear what you're saying. It's not the way I would think about it. And just kind of showing that you're not angry about something.
And the landscape of the members meeting too, or just a business meeting, when you have one person who's being really angry and another person who's just gently listening or even and responding gently, it stands out in relief where I think people, even if the angry guy may have a point, people tend to, they're uncomfortable by it and they tend to, so even like to... If you're worried, like, if I don't go back in the debate with this guy, I'm going to lose people.
Exactly.
No, actually, the guy who's up yelling or whatever, he's losing people just by his demeanor because that you know, that's not what – it disrupts the peace of a church to approach things like that. I think in the church world, too, so much of, like, we open ourselves up to some criticism that we may think is thoughtless or inappropriate or ignorant. And sometimes it's because there's been a lack of communication. Mm-hmm. When we don't communicate, when leaders don't communicate clearly about something or what we're going to do or what the decision is or just about the process or something, people fill in the gaps with assumptions.
Yep,
and it's wrong for them to do that. Yeah. But in some ways, we've given them sort of this space to do it because we're not communicating. And so, you know, they may come and go, how come you're doing this? And like, we're not doing any of that, actually.
Yeah.
Well, they have filled in the gap with their imagination, and they shouldn't do that. But we could minimize the amount that happens if we could be as transparent as you know as we can be.
Yeah, I agree. I was just speaking to somebody recently in another church and just their situation, and one of the things they said was that our leaders tend to be very secretive, and they're secretive because they've had a lot of criticism over time, so they're kind of almost shutting down. But that actually welcomes more criticism because sometimes you just need to share the information and ride out a little bit of the frustrations with people and just patiently, gently guide them through it. One of the things I was just thinking there in terms of criticism as well, I think we need to talk about how to give good criticism. Okay. So we're talking about how to deal with criticism, how to receive it. But what happens if somebody around you really is doing something that is wrong or bugging you and you actually are wanting to give a critique to it? I mean, as I said earlier, you give sermon critiques as part of class. Like there's moments that are structured where you need to give it. There's moments that are informal where you need to give it. And dealing with criticism, I think, is 75% of the deal. Like you got to figure out how to take it. But I think 25% of that deal is, well, how do you give good criticism so that the person actually can take that? What's your thoughts on that?
I don't know. It's a different episode, I think.
Okay. New episode.
Maybe we'll do that in the second episode.
How to give good criticism.
Because it's a good question, but we could go for a while on it.
I think so.
We're already at 40 minutes. So.
Yeah, I bet our listeners like listening. We won't take them further. One thing I would say, kind of summing all this up, is the early years, I thought criticism was really bad and it hurt and it angered me. As we've said, as we get older, I now look for the truth in the criticism. And so when someone comes to me, I'm not really hearing the whole sentence they're giving me. I'm looking, okay, why are you giving me this? What have you seen? Where am I going wrong? Am I actually doing the right thing, but in the wrong way? Am I doing the right thing, but packaging it in the wrong way? have I said one thing over and over again that they've picked up on? I used to say I'm tired a lot in ministry, and then people would critique me for saying I'm too busy. And you're thinking, why did they think I'm too busy? Oh, because I'm saying I'm tired so much. So just learning those little things. So one of the biggest things I can encourage people to do with dealing with criticism is actively approach criticism by looking for the truth within it. Mm. And the person might not even be aware where the truth is. They might just be angry at you, but you can find something in that. And that would be my encouragement and challenge. Slow down and find what there, you know, the truth. And if you genuinely can't find anything, then treat it as nonsense and move on with your life. Do you know, don't let it weigh you down.
Yeah. My final encouragement would just be to remember what the Lord says about you. And not only does that protect you from the harm of criticism, true or untrue, but it allows you, it gives you the freedom and the confidence to consider criticism, because it doesn't jeopardize your standing with God and it doesn't compromise how he thinks about you and what he says about you. So I'm open to what someone might say, and I'm open to even considering that it may be true, and I can use it for my growth, because I know ultimately I'm not defined by my failures. I'm defined by the success of Christ on the cross. So that's good. You know, what I thought we could have done is there's some talk show, late night talk show, where they have celebrities read mean tweets about themselves.
Yes.
You seen that?
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe we could like have some mean tweets about us, but I didn't prepare enough. You don't have any? Well, we can solve that problem.
You have plenty.
Dear listener, if you enjoy the podcast, don't give us criticism. Give us good reviews. We're running short on good reviews, and I'm just going to put the guilt trip on again. Give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.